This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information and to find out how you can volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Frank Woodward. Country of the Pointed Firs by Sarah Orne Jewett. Chapter 6. The Waiting Place. How did you manage with the rest of that rough voyage on the Minerva? I asked. I shall be glad to explain to you, said Captain LePage, forgetting his grievances for the moment. If I had a map in hand, I could explain better. We were driven to and fro, way up toward what we used to call Paris de Stars, and lost our bearings. It was thick and foggy. And at last, I lost my ship. She drove on a rock, and we managed to get ashore on what I took to be a barren island, a few of us that were left alive. When she first struck, the sea was somewhat calmer than it had been, and most of the crew, against orders, manned the longboat and put up in a hurry, and were never heard of anymore. Our own boat upset, but the carpenter kept himself and me above water, and we drifted in. I had no strength to call upon after my recent fever, and went down to die. But he found the tracks of a man and dog the second day, and got along the shore at one of those far missionary stations that the Moravians support. They were very poor themselves and in distress, which was a useless proof. There were but few Eskimo left in that region. There we remained for some time, and I became acquainted with strange events. Captain lifted his hand and gave me a questioning glance. I could not help noticing that the dulled look in his eyes had gone, and there was instead a clear intentness that made them seem dark and piercing. There was a supply ship expected, and the pastor, an excellent Christian man, made no doubt that we should get passage in her. He was hoping that orders would come to bring up the station, but everything was uncertain. And we got on the best we could for a while. We fished and helped the people in other ways. There was no other way of paying our debts. I was taken to the pastor's house until I got better, but they were crowded, and I felt myself on the way and made excuse to join with an old seaman, a Scotchman, who had built him a warm cabin and had room in it for a while. He was looked upon with regard and had stood by the pastor in some troubles with the people. He had been on one of those English exploring parties that found one end of the world in the North Pole, but he never could find the other. We lived like dogs in a kennel, or so you thought if you had seen the hut from the outside. But the main thing was to keep warm. There were piles of bird skins to lie on, and he'd made him a big bunk, and there was another for me. It was a dreadful career waiting there. We began to think this steep supply skimmer was lost, and my poor ship broke up and screwed herself all along the shore. We got to watching on the headlands. My men and me knew the people were short of supplies and had to pinch themselves. They had to read in the Bible, man cannot live by fish alone. But they told the truth of things. Deep breath that wears the worst on you. First part of the time, old Gaffett, that I lived with, seemed speechless. And I didn't know what to make of him. No he of me, I dare say. But as we got acquainted, I found he'd been through more disasters than I had, and had troubles that wasn't going to let him live a great while. It used to ease his mind to talk to an understanding person, so we used to sit and talk together all day, for rain, for breeze, and couldn't get out. I got a bad blow in the back of my head at the time I came ashore, and it pained me at times, and my strength was broken anyway. I've never been so able since. The little page fell into a reverie. Then I had the good of not reading, he explained presently. I had no books. The pastor spoke but little English, and all his books were foreign. But I used to say, over all I could remember. The old poets only knew what comfort they could be to a man. I was well acquainted with the works of Milton, but up there it did seem to me as if Shakespeare was the king. He has the sea terms very accurate, and some beautiful passages were common to the novel. I could say them over until I shed tears. There was nothing beautiful to me in that place but the stars above, first passages of verse. Death was always brooding and brooding and talking to himself. He was afraid he should never get away, and it played on his mind. He thought, when I got home, I could address the scientific men in his discovery. But they were all taken up with their own notions. Some didn't even take pains to answer the letters I wrote. You observe that I said this crippled man, David, had been shipped on a voyage of discovery. I now tell you that the ship was lost on its return, and only David and two officers were saved off the Greenland coast. And he had knowledge later that those men never got back to England. The brig they shipped on was run down in the night. So no other living soul had the facts. And he gave them to me. There is a strange sort of country way up north beyond the ice, and strange folks living in it. David believed it was the next world to this. What do you mean, Captain LePage? I exclaimed. The old man was bending forward and whispering. He looked over his shoulder before he spoke the last sentence. To hear old David tell about it was something awful. He said, going on with his story quite steadily after the moment of excitement had passed. "'Twas first a tale of dogs and sledges, and cold and wind and snow. Then they began to find the ice world one. They had been frozen in and got into a current flowing north, far up beyond Fox Channel. And they took to their boats when the ship got crushed. And this warm current took them out of sight of the ice and into a great open sea. And they still followed it due north, just the very way they had planned to go. Then they struck a coast that wasn't laid down or charted. But the cliffs were such that no boat could land until they found a bay and struck across under sail to the other side where the shore looked lower. They were scared of provisions and out of water, but they got sight of something that looked like a great tower. For God's sake, Gavin, said I the first time he told me. You don't mean a town 2 degrees farther north than ships ever been. But we got that course marked on our old chart, and he pushed out at the time. But he insisted upon it, and told him over and over again to be sure I had it straight to carry to those who would be interested. There was no snow and ice, he said, after they had sailed some days with that warm current, which seemed to come right from under the ice they'd been pushed up in. And had been crossing on foot for weeks. But what about the town, I asked? Did they get to the town? They did, said the captain, and found inhabitants. It was an awful condition of things. It appeared, as near as Gavin could express it, like a place where there was neither living nor dead. They could see the place where they were approaching it by sea, pretty near like Avon, and thick with habitations. But all at once, they lost sight of it altogether. And when they got close inshore, they could see the shapes of folks, but they never could get near them. All glowing gray figures that would pass along alone or sometimes gathered in companies as if they were watching. The men were frightened at first, but the shapes never came near. It was as if they blew back, and at last they all got bold and went ashore. Found birds' eggs and seafowl, like any wild northern spot where creatures were tame and folks had never been, and there was good water. Gavin said that he and another man came near one of the fog-shaped men that was going along, slow with the look of a pack on his back, among the rocks, and they chased him. But Lord, he flew away out of sight like a leaf the wind takes with it, or a piece of cobweb. They would make as if they talked a bit, but there was no sound of voices. They acted as if they didn't see us, but only felt us coming toward them, says Gavin one day, trying to tell the particulars. They couldn't see the town when they went ashore. One day, the captain and the doctor were gone until night up across the high land where the town had seemed to be. And they came back at night, beat out and white as ashes, and wrote all next day in their notebooks, and whispered together full of excitement. And they were sharp-spoken with the men when they offered to ask any questions. Then there came a day, said Captain LePage, small spot, that little stain is gone. And they had already watched early in the morning, gave the alarm, and they all put off in the boat and got a little way out to sea. Those folks, or whatever they were, come about them like bats. All at once, they raised incessant arms and called as if to drive them out to sea. They stood flat at the edge of the water, like the ridges of grim wall. No thought of flight, none of retreat. Some clouds are standing by them, soaring on main wing, tormented all the air. And when they're gone, got the boat out of reach of danger, death is said to hook them. And there was the town again, standing up, just as they'd seen it first, coming on the coast. Say what you might, they all believed. Was a kind of a waiting place between this world and the next. The gathering stranger was feeling excited and made excited gestures, but he still whispered huskily. "Sit down, sir," I said, as quietly as I could, and he sank into his chair, quite spent. Gavin thought the officers were hurrying home to report and to fit out a new expedition when they were all lost. At the time, the men got orders not to talk over what they had seen, the old man explained presently, in a more natural tone. Weren't they all starving? And wasn't it a mirage or something of that sort? I ventured to ask. But he looked at me blankly. Gavin had got so that his mind ran on nothing else, you know. The ship's surgeon had fallen opinion to the captain one day that t'was some condition of the lab and the magnetic currents that let them see those folks. T'wasn't the right feeling part of the world anyway. They had to battle with the compass to make it serve, and everything seemed to go wrong. Gavin had worked it out in his own mind that they was all common ghosts, but the conditions were unusual favorable for seeing them. He was always talking about the geographical society, but he never took proper steps as I need it now, and stayed right there with the missing. He was a good deal crippled and thought they confined him in some jail at the hospital. He said he was waiting to find the right man to tell somebody out north. Once in a while, they stopped there to leave a mail or something. He would set his notions and let two or three proper exploring expeditions go by because he didn't like their looks. But while I was there, he got restless, fearing he might be taken away or something. He had all his directions written out straight as a string to give the right ones. I wanted him to trust him to me, so I might have something to show, but he wouldn't. I suppose he's dead now. I wrote to him, and I've done all I could. It will be a great exploit some of these days. I assented absentmindedly, thinking more just then of my companions. Alert, determined look, and the seafaring, ready aspect that had come to his face. But at this moment, there fell a sudden change, and the old, pathetic, scowling look returned. Behind me hung a map of North America, and I saw, as I turned a little, that his eyes were fixed